pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. I'll be your chairman this morning. Our chairman is sick this morning. I can't hear, so if you're going to come to the podium, you got to speak up. I can barely talk, so I've got probably the same thing. With that, there's a presentation. No, he's not going to be here. The public comment period. I have one person I'd like to talk. Cornelius Miller. Okay, come on up. Yeah, come on up there.
Okay, my name is Cornelius Miller.
Yeah, speak up for me this morning.
Okay.
Yeah, put that thing right there.
All right. My name is Cornelius Miller, and I have some complaints about my wife who's at the Stanislaus County Public Safety Center. I'm just going to read this thing that I wrote. My wife, Eva Faye Miller, has been in custody at the safety center at 200 East Hackett Road since September 15, 05. She had a gastric bypass in October of 2004. Gastric bypass patients need a special diet in order to stay healthy. This diet includes calcium citrate, B1, B6, B12, iron, and other vitamins and minerals. B12, being one of the most important nutrients, does not easily get into the bloodstream unless taken under the tongue or by shot or injection. After her gastric bypass, she had been taking all the vitamins above every day. She also takes other prescription drugs for her back and other ailments. On her first day in custody, I myself delivered all of her prescription drugs to the safety center and was told that they would be given to her, but not the ones I delivered. But the same drugs from the pharmacy. In the safety center. That was a big lie, and I don't know how a facility of this size with all the trained police officers could get away with such a big lie. Since being in custody, my wife has lost over 40 pounds, and she is starting to suffer neurological damage from the lack of key vitamins and minerals getting into her bloodstream. She has kited Dr. Cottrell and Nurse Joni Leonard at this facility, and they have not answered her kites. They say her blood test is totally normal. When she was taking blood tests from her outside doctor before she was in custody, he knew by the blood test that she was not taking her calcium pills every day the way she was supposed to by the blood test. And since she has been in custody, she has not been given not one calcium pill in 5 months, but they say that her blood is normal. Someone has out there has had their way of faking her blood analysis because her calcium should be low, but they say it's not. Since her outside doctor turned over care to this Dr. Cottrell in the safety center, I've had to visit her outside doctor many times to tell him what was going on with this Dr. Cottrell and what he was doing to my wife. And he finally had to call him and tell him that he was not following any of the protocol that they had talked about over the phone for 50 minutes. That a gastric bypass patient must have in order to stay healthy, and had to tell him that he was responsible for her life. My wife has kited Captain De Leon at the safety center many times, but each time she does, they get intercepted by a lower deputy, and Captain De Leon either ignores them or he never receives them. When I call the safety center, I usually talk to Sergeant Hudson, and she was very nice and understanding. But after that, a Sergeant Spaulding called me and told me that I was not allowed to call the jail and talk to anybody anymore except for him under any circumstances. He tried to intimidate me as if I was in jail too. He told me that everyone in custody at the safety center was people from the bottom of the barrel, trash. I had not called the safety center for at least a month, but a few days ago I called to get some information about my wife. But I didn't ask for Sergeant Spaulding. After I hung up the phone, Sergeant Spaulding called me back a few minutes later and tried to intimidate me again by telling me that didn't I tell you not to call here and let you speak to me only? So I told him that I called to talk to Captain De Leon only and not to him, and hung up the phone. This is just a few other little comments. I have general comments about the place. They have 6 phones there, but only 2 ever work. So she has a hard time calling me on their phones. And some of the deputies, they lock them down just because they have to work overtime. So they're upset. So they lock them down so they can't call or do anything. Sometimes the food is spoiled. And I heard this from more than one inmate during visiting. My wife, she has a note where she gets 30 minutes to eat her food. Some deputies allow it. Some basically just ignore it. Deputy Ells curses at her sometimes for no reason at all, calls her all kinds of curse words. And does Dr. Cottrell make comments to my wife's nurse on the outside that eating at the safety center is like eating at home buffet downtown? And Joni Leonard, the RN, never returns my pages that I paid to her. And one incident, my wife showed up 2 hours late for court. And in another incident, she called me at 6 a.m. in the morning telling me that they were getting her ready to go to court when court was at 1:30. And I called him up and told him, the deputy, that the court is not until 1:30. He says, well, on my list, it got 8:30, so we're going to get her down there. I said, well, are you going to keep her down? Because she has a cracked vertebrae in her back, and when she sits up for long periods of time, it puts a lot of pressure on her nerves, and she has problems with her back. And 3 times during visit, she was shackled. And I asked the deputy why she was shackled, and they said that she's been unsentenced. And then I would have to tell them, well, she's been sentenced from the first day she came here. And then they would go to the computer and find out, oh, yeah, that's true. But yet they would still, on occasions, just shackle her up by some old note that they had posted somewhere else. And she would even tell them that she's been sentenced, but they wouldn't go to the computer until I complained about it. Okay. And they throw away, she has a note where she gets allowed 30 minutes to eat her food because, you know, when you have a gastric bypass, you have to chew your food very slowly and you can't eat very fast because you no longer have a stomach. Basically, your stomach is bypassed. So some deputies, they throw away her food that she keeps in the refrigerator that she tries to eat later. And she asked, she found out that there was another girl that had the same gastric bypass that she did, and she was allowed to get protein shakes and keep them at the desk or whatever, and they would give them to her, you know, when she needed them. And my wife kited them, asking them for the same thing, but none of her kites was never returned. Never returned it, and then no response whatsoever. And she had another incident where a deputy lied on her and said that Deputy Reed lied on her and said that she was belligerent and cursing. And she has like 5 other inmates that were there that I have written down here that say that the whole thing was, she made the whole thing up. The deputy made the whole thing up. And she sent many kites to Captain De Leon, and every time she never got a response back from him, but always from another lower deputy, and the deputy would say that he's not going to get the kite or whatever, or there was just no response at all whatsoever. I guess that's, my wife can't eat processed sugars that much. She can't eat a little bit, but she can't eat that much. And basically, she lives off the commissary food for the money that I put on her books every month. That's basically how she survives in there. And that's pretty much all I have to say right now.
Okay, thank you. Why don't you, while you're here, why don't you talk to the sheriff back there?
Yeah, I know. I've talked to him already.
You already talked to him? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Is there anyone else during the public comment period? Okay, seeing none, we go down to the consent calendar. We're going to pull D1. Do I have a motion? One way or the other?
I'll move for approval on the balance.
Is there a second?
I second that.
Okay, it's been moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, we'll go back to D1. Do you want to speak on that?
Just for a separate vote, Mr. Chairman. On item D1, I
Oh, here they come. Okay. Let's listen to what they got to say.
I can just voice what I was planning to say. It's just the fact that it goes against my philosophy of additional housing outside of city limits in the county. And I didn't mean to hear the item, but just for a separate vote.
Okay. It's vested anyhow, isn't it?
What this is a report to the Board of Supervisors from the Planning Commission. Our code, this is a report.
That's it. To the board. That's it. Small that baby.
From the Planning Commission regarding tentative maps. Our code allows only for a report to the board. If the board chooses to make a different decision than the Planning Commission did, which was to approve this tentative map, this 12-lot subdivision in Denaire, then we need to schedule another public hearing to have that in front of the board.
Okay.
And we're here to answer any questions if you have any, or we can go through
the
project.
Is there any questions from staff?
I just have a few since we're hearing it. This plan is in the general community plan already, isn't it?
Yes, it's within the Denaire community plan. It's consistent with the community plan, the general plan, and the zoning.
And, as I've read through this, it looks like the sewer and the water is going to be provided by the community. Is this not much different than the projects we voted on a few weeks ago? Was it? It's small subdivision projects in Denaire. Okay,
that's it. Okay,
I think I understand Supervisor O'Brien's choice not to support this, and I think we're going towards that as a county. When we have our growth management plan in place, I think that we'll all be here together. At this point in time, though, I think we have the legal situation in place that this is part of the community plan and it's the appropriate zoning. I'll make the motion to approve it.
Is there a second?
Second, Dan.
Okay. There's a move and a second. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. Motion passed. With that, we'll go down to B12. Mr. Robinson.
Yes, this Assistant Chief Executive Officer Stan Rison is going to provide you a briefing on the policies regarding the approval and reporting of contracts and agreements. As you know, this was an issue that received considerable scrutiny over the last 6 or 8 months, and what you have before you today is a proposed policy that will address many of the issues that have been raised relative to the use of contracts and agreements.
Yeah, good morning, board members. Stan Rison, Chief Executive Office. You'll have to pardon my voice. It's a little rough this morning, been under the weather, but what we have before you this morning is 8 policies for your consideration and possible adoption. Each year, the county enters into hundreds of contracts with a variety of vendors, and this is an attempt to tighten down some of the guidelines and policies so that we can ensure that there's an appropriate level of reporting and approval on those contracts. This work actually is a culmination of several years' worth of work. Back in 2003, a focus group was assembled of some of the major departments, county council, purchasing, and the auditor, controller, chief executive office. They began working on drafting some policies. After Mr. Robinson was appointed, we picked up the draft and decided to take it a step further. And so we have 8 policies for you this morning. These were presented to all the department heads at the department head meeting in October. We took their feedback, made changes as appropriate, and brought it back. And in December, all of the department heads at their department head meeting bought off on these policies. The goal or purpose of these policies is to establish a framework that ensures that the contractual relationships of the county are legal, appropriate, open to public scrutiny, avoid even the appearance of a conflict of interest, and keep the Board of Supervisors appropriately informed. As I read this purpose statement, the policies that you see are intended to be a minimum threshold, and if a department is unsure as to how something fits in the guidelines, then we are advising them to err on the side of openness. The first policy is that departments are required to obtain approval by the Board of Supervisors for any contract or agreement where the total cumulative compensation exceeds $100,000. By cumulative, we define that as compensation paid by an individual department since July 1st of 2003, where there has been no break in contractual services over 6 months. Our first thought was, or first blush, was to look at this on an annual basis, but we realized that the county could enter into a contract with someone year after year after year and fall just below that $100,000 level, and yet over a period of time pay quite a bit of compensation to that particular contractor. Also, there are times where we've had a relationship long enough that it's important to maybe at least stop and ask the question, is it appropriate to go back out with a request for proposals and give new people an opportunity? And so if you don't look at that at more than an annual basis, some of that stuff you may not see. And so by coming up with this cumulative concept, we can see the ongoing impact that, yes, over the last 3 years, we paid somebody $250,000, and do we want to take a fresh look at that contract? Policy number two, departments are required to provide a quarterly report to the Board of Supervisors for any new contractor agreement, contract extension, or amendment entered into during the quarter where the compensation exceeds $50,000 and the contract has not been previously approved by the Board of Supervisors. What distinguishes this from the first policy is that this is merely a reporting. It's not requiring your approval. It's just that they have an obligation to report to you that they entered into a contract that was somewhere between that $50,000 and that $100,000 threshold that requires your approval. This recommendation was made to you by Chief Executive Officer Robinson several months ago when we were discussing the ICGIS contract. Departments have a variety of ways that they can come to you for reporting and approval. In each of the budget processes, we're going to give them an opportunity to consolidate all these requests and bring them to you as one so that you don't get inundated by a lot of little contracts here and there. Policy number three basically requires the purchasing agent to report at least annually those contracts across department lines that exceeded $100,000. It's possible that maybe four different departments have contracts with a particular contractor. Each of the departments not necessarily aware of what another department has entered into a contract. And so this attempts to put it together and have the purchasing agent report to you annually when many different departments are involved. Policy number four states that the preferred method of compensation is either time and materials or lump sum payment. It's an attempt to move away as much as possible from having people on retainer. Policy number five says that no county employee or elected official shall sign the name of another employee or person. County contracts may only be signed by individuals authorized to do so. There has been some question about emails sent out under a department head's thing, and I may point out that this policy is designed specifically in the context of contracts and agreements. Policy number six says that no independent contractor with the county shall be provided with or entitled to use county-owned equipment, such as a cell phone, pager, or computer, unless specifically authorized in the contract. The contractor must agree to comply with all county policies before receipt of the equipment, and the onus is on the department head to make sure that all equipment is returned, if it is in the contract, at the end of the contract. Policy number seven, county employees are prohibited from participating in the selection process for contracts for goods or services when they have a close personal, financial, or business relationship with any person or private entity seeking the contract. The Fair Political Practice Commission has already set some guidelines. This is an attempt to set even a higher standard because we're trying to avoid even the appearance of conflict. So we've asked people as part of this policy to even look for close personal relationships. If I was asked to define close personal, I would say if there's a question, then err on the side of openness. Policy number 8, finally, are all contracts for goods, services, and construction shall carry appropriate amounts and types of insurance coverage as determined by the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. This concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Is there any questions?
I have a couple questions. First of all, going back to the 50,000 threshold for reporting to the Board of Supervisors, months back I was in very strong support of having any contract over $50,000 come to the board for approval. And the response I got back was that it does take quite a lot of time for a department head to create this agenda item to bring to the Board of Supervisors for approval. Yet what you're asking us to do is go ahead and say, now you have to bring a report to us, and that would take much more time than the original approval for the contract.
A couple comments, if I may, Supervisor O'Brien. First of all, these are obviously policy issues, and so you as a board certainly can require approval for $50,000. Part of our thinking in requiring just the reporting is that it won't this can happen in a de facto sense on between the $50,000 and $100,000, so that if you need to get a personal services contract, for example, you need someone in right away going on a certain project, the department head still has the approval, and they can report to you in a de facto sense that here is what I did, so that you're aware of these contracts, but that it doesn't get in the way of slowing down day-to-day business or operations. Okay. So that was some of the thinking behind making that a reporting requirement rather than an approval requirement.
Okay. And then on policy number 7, where it talked about the close personal relationship, would that be like a spouse of someone in a department?
Correct.
Okay. So if there's like someone in charge of, say, an IT portion of a department and they did a personal service contract, a spouse could not be given that contract?
Well, the way the policy states, and let me see if I can go back to it here, it prohibits them from participating in the selection process. So maybe in a particular instance, a spouse is the most qualified, but that person would need to excuse himself from any participation at all or even influence in the selection process for that contract.
Okay, very good.
This would include business partners also.
I would.
They're like that Lee Torrens who ripped the county off for $200,000 a few years ago, the secret business partner, the CEO. Well, this policy would prevent something like that from ever happening again.
Yes, sir.
Is there any other questions or discussion?
I'll move for approval.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
We'll go down to the B-13, Denise. You can't touch the thing, can you? Oh, no, I can't touch it. Oh, you're right. Okay, I got you. Okay. Okay. Just make a motion for me. We just say up, down, around, or just anything. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Denise Hunt, Director of Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. And with me this morning is Linda Downs, our Assistant Director for Administrative and Fiscal Services, and she's going to push the buttons for us. Soon. There we are. I'm before you this morning to talk to you about accepting some money from the state of California to provide services through the Mental Health Services Act. As you recall, I was in front of you in October where we brought our plan for approval before we submitted it to the state. So I'm back this morning after the state has reviewed our plan for authority to move forward. And some of this is a refresher. The Mental Health Services Act was passed a little over a year ago as a state initiative. It was Proposition 63 on the ballot. And voters approved a 1% tax on adjusted income in California over $1 million. This is to provide a fundamental change in mental health service delivery. And the categories of funding, we have received funding for the community planning section. The Community Services and Supports, or CSS plan, is what I'm talking to you about today. And then there are four other categories of funding that the state is still working on in terms of requirements and process for how counties need to address these areas. In terms of the plan focus, the state detailed the plan requirements. There was a document of over 100 pages that told us how we needed to structure the planning process and the request for money for these services. It's meant to change how we do business throughout the state of California in public mental health. The target populations are older adults and adults with serious mental illness, transition age youth, which are people ages 16 to 25, so they're kind of an in-between age group, children and youth with serious emotional disturbances. So it's divided according to age group. And the focus is on providing services to unserved and underserved members of our community. This slide, and Linda, you can just put it all up, I think. This slide is an illustration of how between the Mental Health Services Act priorities and the state requirements, we started with broad community input and asked the community what their priorities were in terms of gaps in service. We had a representative stakeholder steering committee that represented a whole variety cross-section of the community, including community-based organizations, clients, consumers, family members. Our mental health board was involved in all of the planning process. We developed a plan and a draft. There's more. We had a public comment period of 30 days. The Mental Health Board conducted a public hearing. And then the services and supports plan. One more button. We were here in October for your approval to submit that plan. Over 50% of the funding is required to be in full-service partnerships, and these are intensive wraparound services. This is a fairly expensive program. It costs about $10,000 per year per client to serve people in this way, but these services have been shown to be effective and produce the best outcomes for people with serious mental illness or serious emotional disturbance. We have five programs proposed. These are the five programs. Briefly, the homeless outreach program is targeting specifically the west side of Modesto and South Modesto areas, and this is an expansion of our existing homeless outreach program. Our juvenile justice full service partnership program is to provide wraparound services for youth and their families who are involved in the juvenile justice system. Senior access and resource team provides services to people 60 and older in the community. Health, mental health, high risk team is focused specifically on people with a serious compliance with treatment medically as well as mental health-wise. Our integrated forensic team is to bring mental health services, add them on to our existing drug court program, and this is the beginning toward perhaps looking toward a mental health court, which our community told us was a very high priority for them. We have four programs in general systems development. Part of the plan acknowledges that mental health is severely underfunded in California, and so part of this money is dedicated to bringing up systems that cross age groups and are not targeted to very specific populations. So these are all broader. Drop-in center for transitional age young adults, community response team, which is a broad system redesign focused on our emergency services program. There's a great deal of interest from law enforcement in doing it better in our community, and so we're proposing to partner with them as well as community members in redesigning how we do that. Families Together is an expansion of our existing Family Partnership Center, and the Consumer Employment and Empowerment Center is focused on providing services and supports to consumer and family member organizations such as NAMI and our existing consumer network. Outreach and engagement services. There are two proposals here. The first is outreach and engagement services for specific areas and populations in our county that we don't now do a real good job of connecting with in terms of what services are available and what's needed. And then the Garden Gate Crisis Outreach is an expansion of an existing crisis housing program that has been very well received, and we want to expand that and make that even more effective and available. There's also some additional funding included, administrative and one time, which is startup and early implementation. There are several very specific state-defined reporting requirements in terms of outcomes. These are currently in draft form. They should be finalized next week, and they're very comprehensive. These services are all focused on reducing homelessness, incarceration, hospitalization, emergency room visits, and long-term institutionalization for individuals with serious mental illness or emotional disturbance. In addition to reducing those outcomes, we also hope to increase employment, social and community supports, and also education. So the idea is to keep people in school, out of jail, out of the hospital, out of institutions, employed and functioning in our community. I'm very proud to say that we were the first plan in California to be approved by the State Department of Mental Health, which is no mean feat. They have 60 actually, if you include two city organizations who have applied for this funding. They have 60 plans coming at them. Ours was in the first few that arrived. We were approved with very little modification or clarification required, and we're very proud of that. It amounts to about $12 million of funding for Stanislaus County for the three-year period. The positions required for all of these new services, which are 11 new programs, is a total of 42. We're not asking for 42 positions today. We've been before you in the past, in September and October, and we requested and were approved for four positions. We also, as part of our budget strategy for this fiscal year, we front-loaded several programs. That means that we only funded them for 6 months because we knew we didn't have adequate funding to go the full year. So part of the strategy in getting our plan going as quickly as we did was to be able to have positions that we could transfer existing staff into, new positions, providing new services. So 12 of those are what we're proposing to use. And then we currently have seven positions vacant and unfunded that we are proposing to move over into Mental Health Services Act programming. So we are requesting today 19 new positions. We're also requesting the authority to accept the funding for the 3 years, actually, and enter into an agreement with the Department of Mental Health to be able to accept the funding and provide the services according to the state requirements. We also have several agreements with local providers that we hope to execute as part of developing these services, so we're requesting that authority. Requesting authority for the auditor controller to increase appropriations and revenue for 05-06. There's actually a typo on this slide. It should say $3,395,840. The amount in the agenda item is correct. To amend the salary and position allocation resolution by the amounts of positions that I detailed, and then in the agenda item it talks about which funds to transfer between for all those positions. So what the plan will do, it'll develop a structure of new and expanded services for unserved and underserved individuals throughout our county. It will increase consumer and family involvement in all aspects of services in mental health, from planning to providing the services. And it will also help us balance service delivery. We had gaps. We have parts of things that are well-funded and other places in our department that are not well-funded. So part of what this does is it helps us balance that across age groups. And the mantra when we put this planning process together was start small and start smart. This doesn't take care of the unmet need in Stanislaus County or anywhere in California, but the idea is that this will help us develop services and build a foundation in a way for growing mental health services as our county grows and the need continues. That concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Is there any questions?
Yeah.
O'Brien?
Not really questions, just comments. Although I'm not crazy in how this tax is collected or charged,
yes.
I can say that I applaud you and your department for the plan that you guys came up with. It's incredible. I did read it back when you were going for submittal. And the part, again, that just impressed me is how much you got the community involved in it. So I applaud you and everybody in your department, and I'm looking forward to the results.
Thank you very much. Us too.
Mr. Chairman, I have a few questions.
Did you push your button? Push your button, Jim. Find it. Yeah, that boy. There we go.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. Whatever.
Moved down one position because Supervisor Simon's not here or something.
Pardon me?
I'm not in my normal position this time because of Supervisor Simon being missing, so my button is
following the instructions I was given, Jim. Okay, well, go ahead, Jim. Go ahead. Give us your...
Okay, I'm not going to talk about the funding of these programs. I think I've said enough about that, but what I would like to know is the measuring of the success of these programs. You have outcomes that are good outcomes if you can do them,
right.
A reduction of incarceration, truancy, reduction of homelessness, emergency room visits, and employment. But my question really is, how are you going to measure this? Because in the board packet, there was only 205 people more that you were going to serve outside of some administrative changes. I'm more interested in how you're going to show the success of this program, when you're going to do that, and if this program, for some reason, doesn't work, then what are we going to do from there?
Mm-hmm. The 205 individuals to be served that you counted up in the agenda item, those are only in the full-service partnership programs. There actually are several hundred more slated to be served in the general system development and outreach and engagement programs. The outcomes process is very large. It's state-directed. There are probably a couple of hundred indicators that our staff will be required to collect at various points of providing service to individuals. The state is giving us first the direction to do those outcome measurements only with the full service partnership clients. So with those more expensive wraparound intensive services, there are questionnaires to be completed at interview with consumers when they first enter the program every 3 months. And then also what they call key event tracking. So if someone, if we have contact with a client and they say, I was in jail last week, then we ask them a short set of questions about what happened, how many days were you in jail, what's the follow-up for that, do you have to go to court, those kind of things. So when something occurs in someone's life, basically we stop and we ask a few questions. We put all of that into a database that then we have to submit to the state, and the state tracks progress for all of the clients served in those programs. They do it according to where people live, whether they've been to the emergency room, whether they have a primary care physician, how many days they've spent in school or out of school if they're of that age. For older adults, we track people's ability to function in their day-to-day life. There are two instruments, activities of daily living, and another one whose name escapes me, that are quite comprehensive. So all of these are modeled after the program requirements and evaluation from the homeless outreach programs, one of which we have here in Stanislaus County. And these programs have been shown to be very successful in terms of really making a difference, bringing mental health services to people who have a variety of other social problems as part of the result of their mental illness. So the idea of all of this funding is that if you improve mental health services, you should see improvements in other areas of life for people. As far as what will happen if we don't make the outcomes, The state has told all counties that, first of all, we'll be contracting with them to produce the reports and produce the information. So we have to have a whole system in place to develop all of that. And then they'll very assertively monitor those outcomes. The state holds the purse strings. So if you have a program that is not coming up in terms of bringing services to the community, and then if you have a program that's also not producing outcomes, that's up to the state to manage in terms of their expectations about this funding, because there are several stakeholders that are watching the whole process very carefully. There's an Oversight and Accountability Commission in the governor's office that is looking at how the state manages the outcomes of this Mental Health Services Act. I realize that's a long answer, but outcomes are completely woven into this funding and these services.
Yeah, well, the outcomes are what's very important to me.
Yeah.
Are you going to give us a report on the outcomes annually on this? Do you plan on doing that? Do we have to request it?
I'd be happy to schedule that. One thing that we will do going along is report to the Mental Health Board about that as well, but I'd be happy to bring a report to the board.
And especially since these are new and it's $3.5 million, I'd like to see in a year just what you've accomplished with that.
Great, I'll be back.
Okay. You also have the probation department involved in this too, don't you? You have a half-time position or so. Just what is the probation department actually going to do for the mental health department?
The position funded through this plan provides probation officer to be involved in our integrated forensics team. And this team is actually modeled after a very successful program that the Mentally Ill Crime Reduction Grant funded Mentally Ill Offender Program. It's a mental health services program for individuals that have been in jail, have been incarcerated, and now are living in the community but are on probation. So the probation officer acts as a member of the team. We found that if you have a probation officer who is part and parcel of somebody's day-to-day work toward recovery, in other words, they're in the community, they're living their life, they're in treatment, and they have a probation officer who knows them and knows the treatment team and is part of the treatment team, they stay out of jail. It works. And so we're proposing that part of this money be used to fund a probation officer to work with us within our mental health services team to provide services to those individuals. We think it will create better outcomes and keep people out of jail longer.
Okay, well, I'm satisfied for now. I would like to see in a year from now just what your outcomes are and how successful these programs are.
Thank you.
This isn't just for our county, though. The other counties have access to this through your department, right?
These services are intended to serve Stanislaus County.
Just Stanislaus County?
That's right. Every county is able to put together a plan and
come to your facility?
No.
No, okay.
They would come to their own facilities.
Okay, and they all have facilities?
Yes. Every county
has. I was under the impression that not all the counties around us have.
Psychiatric hospital, I think.
Yeah. Not every county has a psychiatric hospital, and several counties contract with us to provide that service already.
That's what I'm getting at.
Right. Yes, we anticipate continuing to receive patients from other counties.
Yeah, but they contract with you. Then they have to provide you the information that is required by the state of you?
Actually, no. If they have somebody in one of their full service partnership programs who happens to come into the hospital and they use us for that, they then will go back to their own county, and we're not responsible for managing the outcomes of those individuals. We're just providing a service in that case.
Okay. Now, the other one, does this put you in line with what the state required as far as patient to nurse ratio?
That's actually completely separate from this.
Oh, it is?
Yes. This funding specifically does not include hospitalization services.
Okay, so
this is designed to be
community. You don't fall under that guideline that said that there had to be so many patients to so many nurses.
That's only in our hospital, only at Stanislaus Behavioral Health Center. So we are subject to the 6-to-1 nurse or patient-to-staff ratio for nurses in acute psychiatric facilities, but that's separate from this funding.
Okay. No, you want to talk. You push my name. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay, don't
Supervisor
do that.
Mayfield.
Okay.
I'd like to echo Supervisor O'Brien's comments on how well you've done, it's a bit of a task, I know, because you're the first one there, and you don't know what's a wrong answer yet. So I think you've done exemplary. I was struck this morning on my way to work. There was a piece on National Public Radio about a mental health director somewhere in the east part of the country. And she has a staff person that spends all day, every day, calling psychiatric hospitals looking for places to put their people that need them. And many days she doesn't get any openings. And it just struck me that we're providing services for 18 other counties here, and it's a wonderful blessing that the hospital that we do have is, even though we are in jeopardy in some ways from our funding and that sort of thing. I think Supervisor DeMartini's request for an annual update on outcomes is a really wise one, and I would like to ask that maybe you be available when you put that report out and you're going to bring it to a public setting, that maybe we get an opportunity to have some time with you one-on-one just to clearly understand what we're talking about. Sometimes when I'm just reading through it in the evening and there's been a whole day there, I don't understand everything I'm reading. So
sure.
I would look forward to that. With that, I'd like to make a motion for approval.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
It's been moved and second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you, Dean.
Thank you very much. This is a good day.
Thank you. Okay, now we're going on to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development regarding Stanislaus County's fiscal year 2006 allocations for the Community Development Block Grant and Emergency Shelter Grants.
I'll refer this to the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received from the State of California Department of Health Services a copy of the financial audit of the Stanislaus County Health Services Agency's maternal and child health program and a review of the program's management and operational procedures.
Refer this to the Health Services Agency and the Chief Executive Officer. Is there any Board of Supervisors report this morning?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor DeMartini. Yes.
I would just like to report that the Retirement Board is meeting today to go over our 76-page actuarial evaluation. You're all welcome to join me on that. It starts at 2 o'clock.
I have a question to ask you, but you're on that board. As you look at on that board, I know there's a bunch of other counties in this state who are hanging on the edge as far as their retirement money available for people as they retire. Could you find out exactly... I heard this one on television, is how much would our indebtedness be to retirement? Is there a way to find that out, being you're on that board? I mean, how much indebtedness would we occur as far as the retirement board?
Well, the actuarial evaluation does calculate how much we're going to owe in the future. I can tell you that the board has done a good job with its investments. Not that we don't have, you know, our issues between us, but last year wasn't the best year with the stock market. We came within $1.5 million of what we needed, and that's very close. Our fund is $1.2 billion, mm-hmm. and the year before we made $40 million more than we needed. So, you know, some years it's a little more, some it's a little less.
Okay.
But we're doing fairly well. We're nothing like San Diego County.
Right.
So
right.
There, we are adequately funded for the present.
For the present. We're adequately funded.
In these, the actuarial valuations calculate what we need to contribute to the fund, how much the fund needs to make in order to provide the retirement for our former employees. And we calculate, assumptions are made on how much the inflation rate's gonna be, the average lifespan of the former employees and that. There's, it's 76 pages, and I certainly would like to be glad to go over it all with you.
Okay. Does someone want to go over there?
I don't think we need to make a commitment at this point.
Okay. Okay. With that, anybody else? Okay, any legislative, fiscal, and management?
Yeah, just a couple issues this morning. Would like to inform you that SB 9, Senator Denham's bill that would have given us relief under our negative bailout is stuck in appropriations and suspense file. We don't anticipate it's going to come out. The good news, AB 959 was voted out of appropriations. It will be proceeding to the Assembly floor. AB 959, a former bill, will provide for additional reimbursement for Medi-Cal patients seen in our clinic system. So it is encouraging at this time. Senator Denham is looking for alternatives to continue to address the property tax sharing arrangement that currently exists that's disproportionately in favor of the state. And as a final note, the State of the County address, which was scheduled today and due to the illness of our chairman needs to be rescheduled, will either be the 31st or the, I believe, the 7th, the following week, depending on Supervisor Simon's health.
With that, we're adjourned.